Welcome to the Real Estate Pros Podcast, the weekly show for real people in the business of residential sales and property management. Ready to talk insights and inspiration with today's guest, here's your host, Josh Cobb.
Hello everyone, happy new year and welcome back to Real Estate Pros for 2015. My name is Josh Cobb. This is our first episode of the new year and I hope you've enjoyed some well-earned time off over the Christmas and New Year period with the family. I know I certainly have. 2014 was a pretty big year for everyone in real estate, so I'm sure you're refreshed, recharged and ready to get stuck into it and make this year even bigger. First of all, I'd like to say thank you for tuning into the show. I know there's probably a million and one other things you could be doing right now, but you chose to tune into this very podcast and listen to us for the next 30 minutes or so. So I truly appreciate that. And we promise not to let you down with a great guest today. I'd also like to say a big thank you to all of our sponsors for all of their continued support. Real Estate Dynamics, Business Depot, Console and Beepo. Without them, this show wouldn't be possible. And I know they all have at least one thing that can help you take your business to another level in 2015. So please go and check them out and see how they can help you. But on to this week's show, and I don't think we could have asked for a better way to start off the new year. I'll be speaking with Ewan Morton, the Managing Director of Morton and Morton in Sydney. Ewan is going to share with us the story behind the Morton and Morton brand, some of the initiatives that have led to the long list of awards that the company and the staff are continuing to achieve, and how you can build a real estate team that helps build your business. Ewan is a true leader in all sense of the word, so I know you'll really enjoy this episode. But before we catch up with Ewan, I have a discovery I'd like to share with you. So let's do that right now.
Today's show is brought to you by Console, Australia's leading real estate agency software, offering property management, sales management, property data, and website solutions. Let us help you grow your business. Visit www.console.com.au.
This week I'd like to tell you about a website called Delighted, which is an app for quickly and easily measuring what your clients think of you. It's based on the Net Promoter Score system, and if you haven't heard of Net Promoter Score before, it's based on the perspective that every one of your clients can be categorized as either a promoter, a passive, or a detractor. And by asking one simple question, how likely is it that you would recommend your company to a friend or colleague? You can track these groups and get a clear measure of your company's performance through your customers' eyes. Delighted lets you import your email addresses, and within a matter of minutes, you can be surveying your clients and getting instant feedback on why your clients gave you the score that they did. We spend so much time in business looking for new ways to win new business, but not nearly enough time looking at how we can deliver more value to our current clients. So I highly recommend checking out this app. If you aren't already measuring your Net Promoter Score, you can trial it for free by visiting www.delighted.com, and that's spelled D-E-L-I-G-H-T-E-D.com. And from there, you have the option of multiple paid accounts based on how many surveys you'd like to send per month. I encourage you to go and check this out. You won't be disappointed. And with that, let's transition over to this week's featured guest. Well, I'm excited about introducing our guest today, Ewan Morton. Ewan is the Managing Director of Morton & Morton in Sydney, which was established in 1996 and has grown from a small family business to an industry leader, now employing over 50 people with a growing list of industry awards. Ewan was named the REB Industry Thought Leader in 2013 and 2014, and in winning this award was described by the Director of Sterling Publishing as the nation's top real estate agent who is regarded by his peers for his passion and energy. Ewan, I've given our listeners just a brief overview, but take a moment, tell us a little more about you personally, and then give us an overview of your business.
Well, in terms of the business, we have got six offices effectively in Sydney, and we employ on the agency side of the business, so over 50 people. We have two offices in the CBD, one at each end, one office in Woolloomooloo, Pyrmont, another in Crowsnest, and we're establishing a new office down in Zetland, which is, for people who know Sydney or don't, it's on the way to the airport. There's a whole lot of apartments are being built, so we're going down into there.
Yeah, fantastic. And what about yourself, Ewan? When did you start your career in real estate?
Well, probably, I don't know when did it start, 20 years ago plus. I started off as a salesperson in a suburban office, and then I had an opportunity to go overseas. So I did the majority of my, the beginning of my real estate career in Hong Kong, London and then Singapore, which was a bit unusual. But it gave me a pretty broad perspective on how agencies done in other countries. And then I came back to Australia and established the business in 1996. So I suppose the majority of it has been with Morton & Morton, but I have had an unusual start to it. When I left university, I actually worked for IBM. So I did 3 years with them, and that's probably had a significant impact on how I run the business and how I view things.
And just explain that for our listeners a little bit more, Ewan, when you say it's had an impact on the business, how do you feel it has?
Well, firstly, I did at the time, I suppose, when was that, 1989 or something like that, 1989, I did a trainee program with IBM, and in terms of training, it was full on and probably more comprehensive than anything that you would find in the real estate industry. It was all about selling. So it was about selling computer solutions, and I had to do a year's training with them. And when I look back at that, it was way tougher than anything that I think is available in the real estate industry. And it set me up well. So for example, we used to have to do comprehensive role plays effectively, but this was comprehensive role plays that involved talking to high-level executives. So it was pretty stressful, and you had to be good at it or you weren't going to be allowed out in the field. It was that tough. Whereas in real estate, we're a bit like, you know, do role play, it'll improve you, but it's not a mandatory thing about whether you'd be let out in front of a customer. The benefit of that is when I was let out in front of a customer, the customer was easy. So I think from a business toughness point of view, IBM set me up a lot better than what you would normally get in the real estate industry as a startup, definitely. The other thing it did too is obviously they were a technology company, and being a technology company, they were right in front of the curve. And so they were doing lots of things back in the late 80s, early 90s that now are sort of, even now, are only being, you know, coming in. And so it certainly made me, all the way through my real estate career, I've thought a lot about technology, and it's really due to that IBM experience.
That's really, I'd just like to delve into that concept that you were talking about, you know, basically having the staff trained before they're allowed in the field. Is that something that has moved a little bit into the Morton & Morton structure? Is that something that you guys entertain with your salespeople?
No, we're not as tough as IBM. And also the thing with the IBM people, these are people who had university degrees and good university degrees. Like there was people with PhDs and masters, so they were smart people. And sometimes I think, you know, in real estate, we're not got PhDs and masters and those types of qualifications. And I think that we think it's hard, but when you look at industries such as, you know, technology or banking, whatever, honestly, we're pretty soft in comparison. So I would like it to be that way, but I don't think they could cope with that, and we have obviously a more nurturing strategy with all of that.
Well, we're going to delve into that a little bit later in the show, but just in researching for this interview, I found that back in 2013, you introduced an employee share scheme to ensure the business is best placed to attract and motivate key staff and incentivize future performance. Can you delve into this a little bit more for our listeners, help us understand what this looks like and what the results have been?
Yeah, well, I think one of the problems that faces real estate businesses is the conflict between principals and the team, and particularly principals and salespeople. And the issue there is that salespeople are incented on revenue and principals are incented on profit. So you're at loggerheads already. Now, there's a bunch of other issues in there, but that's really the key one. And by having shareholding, it actually invites people to the business side of the agency where they can understand and begin to appreciate that a business needs to make a profit and the things that have to be done to make that happen. So, and I also think for businesses to get bigger, it's difficult to do that on the shoulders of one man. It has to be a shared responsibility, and it's much better, and it makes the business more sustainable. So, you know, I've got 50 plus people running around there today doing their stuff, and I can't micromanage those people. So it has to be that responsibility of everybody doing it needs to be shared, and I think the shareholding creates that. In terms of the effect, it definitely makes us more united as a team and allows us to have much better conversations with each other. So particularly on the sales front, I think you can have, you know, tougher conversations in a better environment to get better outcomes is the key benefit. At the end of the day, we're all united to make the value in the business increase and for the business to make a profit so that we can all get a dividend. And I think the shareholding unites everyone a lot better.
Does that encompass all departments in the business, Ewan? It's not just sales, the sales department, it includes property management and other areas as well?
Yeah, so we have three broad criteria as to why you get offered shareholding. You have to be a contributor. So doesn't mean being the highest fee earning salesperson. You know, you can be a property management assistant and be deemed to be a contributor. It's somebody who gets in there and does their job really, really well, and also is able to put the company first. That's a key criteria. A lot of people don't realize that as a business owner, you actually have to put the company first, not yourself, if you want that company to succeed. So we look for those behaviors in people who are willing to do that. So contribution is key. Time, they need to have done 5 years at Morton & Morton. And okay. The reason for that is generally within that five-year period, we're going to have had a fight about something. You know, and how we deal with conflict is important. How, you know, if someone's going to, you know, things aren't going their way and they decide to stomp off to the competition or off to a recruiter, then they're not a committed Morton person. And what you need to have is people who realize that, you know, if you can solve these issues and stay together, it's actually the best outcome for the business and for them. So the 5 years, generally, there's going to be some sort of conflict, and also a situation where a person is going to have to put the company first and them second.
Sure.
And it's very telling to see if somebody is able to do that or not. And if they are able to do that, then that puts them in the category of being a shareholder. And the third criteria is leadership. So do they possess leadership capabilities where they can, you know, one of those people who can actually bring people together, show that they can, you know, keep themselves on track to the bigger picture and have leadership quality. So if someone meets those three criteria, and it's not clear cut, it's basically a subjective process, then they will be offered shareholding.
Okay, I understand. And is that something that's discussed with every new staff member coming on board, that it is something that is offered? I mean, it's on your website, but is it something that's discussed with new staff?
Yep, absolutely. And, you know, there's a process to go through this. It's not the sort of thing that you can rush out and do immediately. You know, there's a process that has to be gone through. There needs to be discussion. I think if you're offering somebody shareholding because you're scared that they will leave, then that's not good. Don't do it. You're better off to have a decent conversation about why you're scared about them leaving, like get that out on the table before you get to that bit. But, no, it's openly discussed. The other thing that has to happen is people need to understand profit. So a lot of people in the real estate industry have had no training in business, no training in profit. You know, everyone understands revenue minus expenses equals profit, but it's not as simple as that. They've got to understand what the levers are. They've got to also understand what profit is used for. So, yes, it pays a dividend, but they also need to understand that investment needs to be made in the business, and that comes from profit. They also need to understand that cash needs to be held in reserve to be able to cover the bills that have to be paid regardless of what the market conditions are. So there's a whole journey that people need to go on. They basically need to mature in their business thinking. So that starts, you know, some people are interested, some people are not, but anybody who's interested in that concept will explain that from day one.
Fantastic. Well, I think it's quite obvious that you're living by that the old saying, Ewan, that you don't build a business, you build people, and people help you build the business. And I think what you're doing in that regard is certainly paying respects to that saying.
Yeah.
But something else I've spoken to you about personally at conferences, Ewan, is in the past has been the ability for your staff to access a coach outside of the organisation should they wish. Can you explain for our listeners in more detail what is exactly on offer to your staff in that regard and what the results of this initiative have been?
I'm a big believer in external coaches. I mean, obviously I can lecture people till the cows come home, but they don't always listen to me. Or I'm not necessarily the person who can deliver the message better because I have a vested interest in their performance. So having a third party who can look at it objectively is helpful, very helpful to the business and also to the individual. So all our salespeople have, if they want it, so it's a choice, you don't have to have it, but all our salespeople can have a sales coach who meets with them on a program that they determine, whether it's weekly, fortnightly, monthly, whatever works. So the salespeople and the new business people all get access to that. I also have used business coaches from time to time with leaders in the organization or managers in order to upgrade their management skills because generally across the real estate industry, our management skills are not very good. So I use external coaches who've actually got nothing to do with real estate. They're generally people who are working in much larger businesses and dealing with the issues of how do you keep an organization of thousands of people going in the same direction. We have a program that we put people through for that. And I have to say, I reckon that's probably some of the best training that we actually do.
Fantastic. And can I ask, some of our listeners might be wondering what the take-up has been, if it's an optional thing for the people in the business. And what's the take-up been?
Pretty much everybody.
Fantastic.
Yeah, everybody. And it's good because, you know, the thing I like about it is when you're in a selling position, your personal situation, your business situation do intermesh. And so things are going badly at home and it does affect your ability to get out there and sell, like, you know, you inflict yourself on the public in order to get business. So there's sometimes lots of issues that need to be talked about and I don't necessarily want to hear it, I think, is part of it. I'm, you know, in terms of my own development, I've dealt with my issues and so I don't necessarily you know, I haven't got time to get bogged in it. And it's also not my place to also allow people to indulge it. So, but you need to have some resource somewhere where it can be dealt with appropriately. Otherwise, you know, all sorts of things can happen as people are trying to work their way through issues. You know, they're talking to recruiters or poachers or anything like that. And you want to make sure that there's a safety mechanism around it where they can have a safe conversation with somebody who is completely there for them. And I just find it a much better way for people to deal with their issues. You know, I can sit down with a salesperson and tell them exactly where their problems are, but that doesn't matter. It's not for me to tell them. It's for them to work that out themselves. If we're going to fix that or improve their performance, that's a journey they have to go on themselves. And me lecturing them is not going to work. It doesn't work. So that's why I think the third-party coach is a necessary part of the formula of running an agency business.
No, I think it's a fantastic initiative. And is it just, you mentioned for your salespeople, is it for department heads and people in the property management department as well?
Yeah. So, well, I mean, we use a sales coach who was also a business coach. And so I've got one of my office teams are working with a business coach. So, you know, there's four people in that team and they've written a business plan this year for that office. And the business coach has helped them to put it together, keep it on track, keep them accountable. And I think the business coach has been far more effective at that than I would ever have been. And yeah, and can put more time into it than I can. So, you know, there's an example where, you know, a team came together and said, we need a business coach. And so we gave it. And I think the outcome to that has been fantastic. The performance of that business unit is not only improved, but they're also working a lot better together. And I think that's the key thing. I think their performance next year is going to be even better than what it was this year.
And I find it really interesting that you brought those people from outside of the industry in, and you alluded to it before, Ewan, about the fact that the real estate industry does lack that managerial or business in a lot of areas. I certainly think it's upskilling them in those areas very much so, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think having good business management skills is really important for our industry. I think that I've been thinking a bit about this. I think, you know, with the issues that face our industry as a whole, our business, we're very much a small business industry. And, you know, people get out there and list and sell houses, and that's all good, and they can make a good income from that. But the way the industry is going with pressure on margins, pressures on fees, you need to be able to do more with the resources you've got, and that requires better management skill. So, you know, I think anybody who wants to grow their business, and if you're serious about that, then you do have to invest in the skills of your team.
No doubt. Well, Ewan, I'd like to just shift gears a little bit and turn the spotlight onto you for a moment. And we often hear the 20,000-foot view of someone's success in real estate. Here on our podcast, we want to take it down to that grand level of actual moments in time where you've either failed or succeeded. Can you tell us a story, take us there with you, of a moment in your career where you felt like you'd failed? Tell us what happened and how it made you feel.
Look, if I had to add up my wins versus my losses, my losses are a lot greater. So, you know, that's where you get all your learnings from. Like, can I give you a specific example? I could talk to you all day about the mistakes that I've made, or, you know, the issues that have come up.
Is there one that sticks out in your mind as a moment, as a turning point for you yourself?
I had a moment probably about 5 years into it when I really thought that I'd made a mistake starting the business, and you know that I'd sweated away for 5 years and basically gone nowhere. So that was a moment where I was like, and I would have said that was the bottom of the barrel moment, where I thought, oh my God, my great dream of what I'd set out to try and achieve had just disappeared into the swamp, and I just didn't know where it was. I remember that and going, oh my God, this has turned out to be much, much harder than I thought. You know, I think you sort of, it's like having children. You know, people can tell you what it's going to be like till you're blue in the face, but until you've actually got the child, you don't really understand. And I think starting a business is the same thing. So I had a moment, I thought, right, well, I've got a choice here. I can either, you know, live an ordinary life and be average or give up, or I've just got to smack my way out of this. And I just thought, I'm just going to smack my way out of it. Part of a big moment for me probably was the birth of my first child. You know, I remember thinking, right, I've now got three children. But I remember going, right, I've got to get my act into gear here. You know, we were renting at that stage. I didn't have much money really. 5 years is a long time to basically earn nothing. So, you know, I thought I've really got to do something in order to, you know, get out of it. So I actually went off to a financial planner, and my parents are in the business as well. And so we all went off to a financial planner, and I said, you know, this is what I want. I'm going to have, well, at that stage, I was going to have four, but three kids did me in. I said, you know, how am I going to educate these kids, house them, you know, the family? You know, my parents are retiring. They're actually retiring now, but back then I thought, well, I'm going to have enough money for them to retire. Can you work out for me what the business needs to be, and where do I need to get to in order to be able to afford all these things? So, you know, that was a really powerful exercise, because basically they came back and said, you need to three times the business in order to be able to afford this stuff. So I was like, okay, great. Well, now I know what I need to do. So now I'll get on and do it. So that was I think that was a critical moment. Another critical moment, I think, was around the GFC. You know, that was a very tough time. I think I learned more about business and leadership. And it was another moment where I learned a lot about leadership and myself, I think, where I, you know, I think I've been operating the business out of fear at that point. I mean, it's pretty scary, the GFC. I mean, our average sale price at that time had been $1 million, and it dropped to 500,000. Our volume dropped by a third.
Wow.
So, you know, we were staring down the barrel of some pretty big losses, and I had investors in the business at that point, and, you know, I felt very responsible for that. And again, it was one of those moments, well, there's only one way, and that way is forward, and I'm just going to have to, again, smack my way out of this and fight forward. So I've always had a, even throughout all of that, I've always had a clear vision about what I wanted the business to be, what I wanted to represent, and I'm very glad for that because, and that's what I'd say to people, you really need to have a very clear view about what you're trying to achieve, because you get punched in the head on a daily basis and pushed off the path to that vision all the time with the pressures of business. So, you know, knowing where you're going to go means you can actually pick yourself up, redirect yourself back towards that vision and keep going. So I think that's a really critical bit.
One thing that resonates with me, and certainly I know it will with our listeners as well, is the word focus. Every time that you got just a roadblock in the way of achieving the next goal, really you just knuckled down and knew what you had to do to do it, and you just went and did it.
Yeah, and what happens, I think, is you then develop a system, a mechanism for dealing with trouble. So, you know, one of the things that I think our firm is really good at is getting punched in the head and then getting back up again. Like our speed of recovery is fast. So, you know, it's no easier now than it was in the beginning. Like there's challenges all the time. It's how you deal with those challenges, I think, is the key. So, you know, I'm becoming less and less emotional about trouble. And as a management team, I reckon we handle our emotion around trouble really well. We just don't let extraneous emotion get in the way of what needs to be done, and we move quickly. So, you know, if someone resigns that, you know, is a shock, or, you know, a client situation that blows up, or, you know, stuff like that, we move quickly. And what I've learned is if you move quickly, you have your plan in place, you get back on your vision, what comes out of the disaster is better than what you had prior. So, you know, we've become very good at that. And I don't see that ever changing. Like that's a key bit. So even this week, you know, we've actually made an acquisition of another business, and we're about to merge the two businesses together. So there's a ton of detail that goes with that, and everybody's working really hard, and people are a bit frazzled as a result of that. So, you know, we're just saying, I'm standing there, okay, everyone keep calm, make decisions, deal with this, just keep moving forward. That's the key, is to make sure you keep moving forward.
Absolutely. Well, let's take it to the other end of the spectrum, you, and can you tell us a story that sticks out in your mind of a moment where you felt like the formula you had in place was the right way about growing a real estate business? Again, take us there with you. Was there a moment that stands out? What happened? What was going through your mind at the time, and how did it make you feel that you'd really figured out the formula of growing in the business of real estate?
I think part of that process of going right, I remember sitting going, I'm in the swamp of small business, and I need to get out of it. I remember being resolute, and I remember thinking to myself, right, I'm just going to go for it, and whatever I have to do, I'm going to do it. So you've got to have that absolute 100% commitment to what you're doing. We had some opportunities. I suppose it's a series of things. Our business has evolved a little differently in that we have brought investors and different partners in and out of our business over time. So it hasn't just been me and my dad. You know, we've had corporate partners. We've got staff shareholding now. Next year we'll have different investors coming in. So working out how to do that has been one of the critical parts of how we've been able to grow. So I definitely think that's been a bit of a moment. And that happened, by default, really. Like we sort of evolved into that. It all started with a relationship with a developer that evolved into them having a shareholding in our business. So I think from a business point of view, that was a bit of a moment. I think when I look back on it, there was a lot of risk that surrounded that. And I remember I had a lot of anxiety around it because I wasn't quite sure how it was all going to pan out. But now that we're down the track, it panned out really well. Without having done that, I wouldn't have been able to get to the size that we are now. So, and I think that's something worth commenting on. Like, my decision making I've made has always been, I always make my decisions about what's best for the business, not what's best for you and Morton. So I hope the listeners can understand the difference there. My view is if I make good or make the best business decisions I can make for our business as a whole, so that's taking into account all our people, you know, what's best for the Morton business, you and Morton will be looked after in all of that. And I'm a big believer in that. You know, if everybody just concentrates, and we say that to our team, if everybody concentrates on making the best business decisions for our business, then everyone will actually be okay in the long run. Even though in the short run it might seem like a compromise, it actually works. So that's very much worked for us.
And would you say that it's been a proud moment for you, Ewan, seeing some of these staff members come through, you know, with the additional initiatives that you put in place with the external coaching and the shareholding? Is that a proud moment for you as the business, as one of the business owners, for those staff, seeing them succeed from those initiatives?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you've got to also, I also had another thought process. So I thought, you know, what's this going to be? What my career is at Morton & Morton. So what's going to happen when I'm 65? I'm the only one that's still here. You know, I didn't want that for my career as well. I wanted to share my career with like-minded people who I worked well with, that I had lots of trust with, where they can get the same benefits out of the business that I did or I had.
Yeah, and if I can shift gears just again and look at the business growth side of things, the three biggest challenges every person working in real estate faces when marketing their services is either creating awareness of their brand, generating leads, or increasing loyalty and advocacy of their current clients. Can you give our listeners maybe an overview of your marketing strategies, technologies, and philosophies behind solving some of these challenges?
Well, it's actually pretty simple. The best marketing you can do is do a good job. And I think we lose sight of that, where sometimes we're so busy looking for the next lead that we fail to do the very best we can with the client that we've got. So our biggest source of business, be it on the selling side or the property management side, is referral. And it's probably the cheapest form of marketing and the most powerful. So that would be the first thing that I'd say. It doesn't mean that we don't have, you know, prospecting and marketing systems. We do. Like, you know, salespeople have areas and they're, you know, filling letterboxes with stuff and they're writing letters and they're calling people and they're databasing those people that they meet and forming relationships with those people. The key to it is you can have all of that stuff, but if you aren't doing a good job and you're not focusing on making sure that your skills are industry leading, then all that stuff will be a waste of time. So I always think, and particularly in this complexity of our world, particularly with the digital side of things and, you know, lead generators and all this sort of stuff, sometimes I just think, you know what, stop. Let's go back to looking at the process that we're using to rent our properties and sell our properties and make sure we're doing the very best that we can.
No, look, certainly we spend a lot of time in business looking at how we get new clients when our current clients is really where we ought to be spending our time, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, and then from that, if you're doing the very best that you can, then you can work out where your growth areas can be. You know, you can reach a point where, you know, maybe you're getting as much business out of your marketplace that you can get. But to know that, you've got to make sure that all your processes are as good as you can possibly make them. And from there, you can then lean onto the business decision, okay, well, how do we grow our marketplace? Where do we go to next? You know, those types of things. So I think that's the linchpin of it. And I think that we can be very easily distracted from that with the pressures of modern business.
Essentially what you're doing, if you're looking at those other strategies first, or, you know, generating leads as opposed to looking after your current clients, it's tantamount to painting a rusty car.
Yeah.
And, basically there's no point in putting new business if it's going out the back door.
Yeah, that's right. So the other thing we do too is we try very much to tie our teams in together. So property management, leasing, new business and sales, that they all work as a team. And one of the things that we find is clients deal with a lot of people in our organisation. And, you know, when I look at the database, you know, from time to time, and I can see one person who's dealt with various different people and people who are no longer working for Morton & Morton. And I can see that, you know, a team being able to create the relationship and the service to the client is part of the key. So, you know, everyone being islands where they're all doing their own thing, I don't think is as effective as everybody working together.
Well, Ewan, thanks so much for your input so far. We're about to hit the fast five, where I'll ask you five quick questions and get you to come back with five quick answers. But before we do, we're going to hear our fast fact of the week. This week's fast fact comes from the social breakup report published by Exact Target, which found that 51% of people who like a company on Facebook rarely or never visit that page after liking them, which means that over half of the people who like your company Facebook page have only ever been to it once. I think it's a timely reminder to look at what value you're providing your fans on social media, especially Facebook, and if what you're doing is having an impact on actual business outcomes like new leads or client loyalty. I'm keen to hear what's working for you. Drop me a line via our website, Facebook, or Twitter. Well, Ewan, we've reached one of my favourite parts of the show where I'll ask you five quick questions and get you to come back with five quick answers. Are you ready?
Yeah, hit me with it.
Fantastic. Name one person who's been an inspiration to you throughout your career and why.
A guy called Alan Hart from years ago who gave me hope that I could achieve my dream. This guy, he made a speech at a conference that I was at that really resonated with me. And it was at a time where, you know, I was trying to work out the way forward, like, you know, in terms of was I on the right path? And that particular speech just made, and I can't even remember what he said, you know, like, but it just, you know, really lifted me to say, you know what, keep doing what you're doing. You're on the right track. So I've always appreciated that as being a moment that I suppose took me out of the crack phase, if I could use that term, where I thought, okay, come on, you're on the right track, you just got to keep going.
Ewan, what is your favourite thing to do when you're not at the office?
Well, I have three daughters, so they keep me busy. I did go to the Katy Perry concert with one of them, like a good modern father. I'm right into gardening, which, funny, that has a lot of parallels to business gardening, but I've got quite a big block that I live on, and I'm in the process of turning it into the botanical gardens. So, I suppose that's my main thing.
Ewan, what is your favourite business book that you've ever read and why?
The one that I think's had the most, actually probably two, Good to Great, which is, you know, there's been subsequent books to there, you know, from that. But that had a really big impact upon me, the learnings in that book, and it really resonated. So that's one business book that I really have read. I think I've read it a few times now from cover to cover. The second book was a book called The Speed of Trust, and it was about how if you can have trust in your organisation, then you don't need a lot of management. So a lot of management, things that we put in place are checks and balances to make sure that our teams are doing what they're supposed to be doing, and that actually wastes a lot of time and resource, whereas if you can all just trust each other, it's far more efficient. So that had a big impact. And a third one, if I was to put it in, was The E-Myth.
Yes.
Which, that's a famous book.
Michael Gerber.
Yeah. Look, I got that when I started off. I mean, we ended up getting 200 managements all in one go once, and I just about drowned. and that book really about the whole systems and process, the whole McDonald's thing, getting all your checklists and everything. And it applies to everything in business, getting into a system so that there's less reliance on a human being to do it. You've got a process behind it. So I'd say those three books probably have the biggest impact.
Ewan, what is your favourite technology resource you use daily to help run a better business?
Yeah, I'd say my iPhone 6. It used to be my mini iPad, but probably the iPhone. I find with that I can be out and about a lot more and I can deal with a lot more stuff on the run rather than having to be in the office. So I find that good for being out and about with customers and talking to people who can, you know, help us grow to the next level. So, yeah, I think that's probably the best thing.
Ewan, it's often said that the success of a real estate business is measured by how many properties they sell or how many properties they manage. But if you had to choose one thing, just one, that prevents people in real estate from achieving success, what would it be and what would your advice be to overcome it?
That is a good question. I think that everybody is limited by themselves. And the best thing and this doesn't apply just to real estate, it applies to everything. I think that if you want to be successful, you really have to step up and look very carefully at yourself and what are all the things that are limiting you from being able to move forward, and be really brutally honest about that. Good to Great talks about that a lot, about you've got to be able to look at the carnage of something and be honest about it. And I think that relates very much to yourself. If I think about all my time in real estate and all the people that have been through this business, on the whole, the thing that has held them back has been something about them, not Morden & Morton. So I would say if you really want to be successful, then you've got to be able to, what I call, make peace with your own crapness, is really look at what you need to improve. And if you do that, then you can also then look at what are your really great things, your points of difference, stuff that makes you stand out from the crowd. And you can really then focus on making the most of those strengths.
Well, I have one last question for you to leave our listeners with some motivation for the week ahead. What is your favorite success quote, and how do you think people in real estate can relate?
My favorite success quote. Look, I think probably the power of an idea is in its implementation. I think that's actually a Michael Sheargoldism, is where I got that one from. But that's something that sticks with me all the time. You know, we all, and I think that's one of the challenges about our businesses, you know, we all have a million ideas. You know, if I gave everybody, you know, every listener a piece of paper and said, write down all the stuff that's crap about your business, they'd be able to write pages. But you have, you know, you're limited by resources in being able to fix all the problems. So, you know, I think that's it. I certainly all think about that. When we have a good idea, you've got to make sure that you implement it properly and make it stick. Otherwise, you can just be going round and round in a circle.
Well, listeners, you can find all of the resources that Ewan has shared with us today, along with all of the show notes, by visiting our website at steps.com.au/Ewan Morton. Well, Ewan, on behalf of our listeners, I'd like to thank you for your time, knowledge and advice today. I know that people are going to resonate with the stories you've shared. How can people get in touch with you personally or find out more about you and your company?
Oh, well, just send me an email. Go to our website, I'm on there. They can, just email me, you'd be fine.
And your website for our listeners?
MortonandMorton.com.au.
Fantastic. Well, Ewan, thank you so much for joining us.
Pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Well, that's it for this week. Thank you so much for joining me for the first episode of Real Estate Pros for 2015. If you do enjoy the Real Estate Pros podcast, we'd love you to head over to iTunes right now and leave us a review. And whether you did or you didn't enjoy today's show, we'd love to hear from you about how we could improve, because at the end of the day, this show has all started to help you, the Real Estate Pro. I hope you have a great week ahead and look forward to having you join us again next week. Bye for now.